Last minute, he's like, the hospital needs me, so I'm gonna have to cancel. And so last night I went to his place and interviewed him. So I do have a sound clip.
Mm-hmm.
So today we have Plan B for Brendan in the studio with us, helping me out. Today's topic. So let's get into this. Can you, I turned it down because...
Turn it up.
Why am I turning it up?
Because I can't hear anything. Oh, there we go. Now I can hear it.
Oh, my God.
A little bit. I can hear it a little bit.
You teenagers and your deafness.
What? Are you kidding me? I actually abhor doing that to your ears. It's terrible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so today's talk better? Can you... What?
The problem is this side doesn't work. Anyway, let's forget about it.
Okay. Just wiggle the wires.
I asked Sebastian 5 minutes ago what your topics are, and I wish that I could reproduce the face that he made.
No, because it just came out of nowhere, and I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about right now. But yes, okay, today's topic. Actually, it kind of taps into results that came in recently. The Canadian Census has had... the preliminary results show that it's somewhere between 96 and 98% response rate.
That is amazing.
Depending on whether you're talking about the short version or the long form,
mm-hmm.
There's still the census was rolled out on First Nations reservations a little bit later,
mm-hmm.
so they're not entirely sure what the exact response is yet. But they're saying at this point in time, it's going to be around 96 to 98%, which is astounding.
Mm-hmm.
It is legally obligatory that you do it. But that doesn't mean anything, really. So it's very exciting. And so in that context, there's a conversation going on about whether or not LGBTQ issues should be represented on the census, and if how. And I just realized my notes are all the way over there, so I'll pull them out during the first musical break. But, okay, so just to sort of introduce the topic for the listening audience and you, who's staring at me drinking coffee, even though you've brought fluids into the booth.
You're not supposed to say it.
It's three.
It doesn't matter. Everyone's on vacation. it's only Matthew. He doesn't care.
It's 3 feet away from anything electronic anyway, so it's all good.
It is now.
Just put it over there.
5 feet away.
There you go. Okay. right. So why should you care? So the number one reason why...
Well, the number one most important reason highlighted by this program is that there is no option for if you identify with something else other than male or female.
Yes.
There is no option. There's no trans-identified woman or trans-identified male,
yes,
or any other kind of explanation or option in which...
Yep.
And there are lots of smart people out there who are probably working at the census.
Yeah.
Why isn't that an option? And the fact is that there might be so many people who may have made a mistake on it.
Yep.
By... If you did it electronically, of course. Yep. You would have been prompted so many times...
Yeah.
To answer this question, and you have to wait until like you're done everything.
Well,
before
we did
you
talk about this.
You did talk about it
2 months ago when it first came out. Mm-hmm. That the way that you do it is you leave it blank, and then you press next, and then it goes. You left a blank space,
but you got to keep doing it.
Hit netting next,
and basically it's like you never know when it's going to end, and you might end up getting tricked by accident at some point.
Yeah.
Until eventually you do get prompted.
Yeah.
To explain yourself.
Right.
And that's it. But it's just, shouldn't the option just... Like a little tick box? Like, I just want to tick a little box, and then that's it. I don't want to have to explain my entire life story, you know, in three paragraphs, because that's probably what you're going to need to say if you cannot explain what it is that you identify with.
So this is actually a kind of a profoundly complicated topic.
Profoundly complicated.
Because you get into issue of ticking boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you tick boxes when...
It doesn't describe you completely.
It doesn't describe you completely. This is one of the things that...
But it should be in a user-friendly kind of format.
But it also has to be presented in a way that's useful information for statisticians. Right?
True. Because if you have, like, 150... different genders that
you
can't
run statistics on 20 people.
You can't.
So, and we'll get into that throughout the show. But I think one of the first things to talk about is, okay, so there's no male-female category C on the census. Why is male and female on the census at all? Why is the government collecting that information? Why does the government care? So I think this is a good sort of introduction and preamble into why this kind of information is on the census at all, starting with what ought to be a little bit more safe. You know, why is male and female there? A lot of it comes down to policy and funding. So what the results of the census ultimately do is they tell Health Canada, Okay, there he goes.
You turn to the side a lot.
He's correcting my mic work.
Yes.
I'm normally better than this, whatever. What does Health Canada do with the results? What does social policy and planning do with the results? If you're looking into single families or something like that, you need to have a good idea of the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You could also look at things like a lot of the results about the wage gap between men and women comes from the census. You just look at the average income of all men in Canada and look at the distribution, and then all women in Canada look at the distribution and then compare the two, and then you see how comparable they are. And if
so, maybe the statisticians would see this these other patterns not being really necessary or not really contributing to the data that they're really looking for.
Well, it depends.
Because the census is built for things like, how much meat do we need to buy this year? How many potatoes do we have to grow?
Well,
it's
more than that. So I actually used to use the census when I was doing linguistics, whenever you're doing sociolinguistics. So that's the interplay between social structures and language. So things like, what language do you speak at home? Are you bilingual? Do you actually speak French and English in your daily life? Do you
this is information that the government
it
finds
does.
Important.
It finds it important because it affects things like, do we need more funding or less funding for French immersion in public
language
schools?
Education, yeah.
Do we need, is it still relevant to put up bilingual signs in provinces other than Quebec? So the number of unilingual French speakers in Ontario and Manitoba has very quickly gone down over the past 20 years. But the number of bilingual speakers who really do use French and English in their daily life has gone up dramatically. And it's not just because people becoming government workers or something like that. It is actually, I mean, it's the old conquest by marriage sort of situation where you have like an Anglo parent and a French parent, and then you have a bilingual household, which is actually how I grew up. In Burlington, a lot of people don't know that there's a French community there. There's enough people there that there was a monolingual French school that I actually went to.
There are small little French language, Franco-Ontarian communities.
Yeah.
There's
pockets
of Ontario
everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, there's.
They don't necessarily speak the best French, but.
They speak their own French.
They speak their own French.
It's possible, for example, to live your entire life in St. Catharines and only speak French. There's a sizable French community there, and you can go grocery shopping, you can get a job, you can date, you can do a whole, but you can have a totally normal life and only speak French in St. Catharines.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only something like 10% of the population, but it's a strong enclave and it's very thorough. They've got all their bases covered. You've got banks and grocery stores, the whole thing. But anyway, census data is useful for this sort of thing. So it can help the local city hall make decisions about policy. You know, has poverty gone up? Has crime gone up? Like what, you know, we need to know these things so that we know where to spend money effectively and intelligently.
Mm-hmm.
This is the fundamental drive of why the census is done.
I've heard of this thing about vegetarianism and veganism becoming fads. People just suddenly changing their diets and then suddenly changing it back. Like if a large number of people, say if like 20% of the population decided.
I feel like this is off topic.
This is off topic. But this is about the census.
Okay.
The kind of information that it's looking to collect.
Right.
If 20% of the population decided tomorrow that they were going to stop eating meat and be vegetarian,
We
would be in big trouble, actually. There would be so much spoiled meat that wouldn't be bought and be thrown out, and all of these animals would have to be slaughtered because apparently we don't need it anymore. But then the next year, they might change their diet back, and then all of a sudden, we don't have enough meat.
Well, this is
so
one
it's
of
really
places,
important that people
the market
log their information with government, like, you know, certain types of information, yeah, like, you know, your diet, your gender, your where you're living, what language do you speak at home, what language do you speak at work, what languages do you speak at all. People, like, there are people on all sides of the political spectrum who have different opinions on this, but objectively, it's to collect information so that our country can be a sustainable economy and environment.
Also, so that it can navigate itself intelligently.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right.
But if 20% of the population tomorrow decides it doesn't eat meat.
Yeah.
And this could also
that's not a census thing, though. That the market
it could have
would
some innuendo
out.
Associated with it, possibly, but if. You know, people were changing their minds about themselves all the time, and the government was judging its decision, making decisions based on the information that they're getting. It's important to collect that information.
Yes, yes.
And it's important that we do it. So 98%, that's amazing.
That is amazing.
I really like hearing that.
Actually, not only that, but they got phone calls regularly from citizens asking if they could help. People who got the short version, who requested the long version, because, for various reasons. There's been a, I think, 7-year gap, 8-year gap in the census collecting. And this is actually a huge problem because major cities, so Montreal, Vancouver, and Toronto, and I think Winnipeg did this as well, they needed the census data so they could actually organize their social services. And so they had to organize their own census, mini census, just for their own municipalities. And the cost of Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal, and Winnipeg, I think it was Winnipeg, doing their own little mini census cost the same amount as running the federal census. And they actually got that funding through federal grants. So it was this huge issue that came up. I think it was 4 years ago that this happened. I'm making that number up. I'm just like, I feel in my heart that it was approximately 4 years ago that this happened.
Just think about the Sebastian that you were 4 years ago.
Yeah, I know. And so it was just one of those things where, like, people were saying, if it costs the same to do 4 cities, let's just do the whole country and get data out of it. So anyway, that's sort of like the introduction, the preamble. Why do we care? Why is this a topic worthy of discussion? Blah, blah. So we're going to go to the first song. This was one of our most well-known listeners. We talk about Alex every so often. Currently in Manchester and moving back to Toronto sometime soon. I was chatting with him online the other day and I was like asking for tips for music. And he's like,
okay. Are you trying to do an impression of your friend?
No. I'm trying to find a polite way of saying what he said. So I'm just going to skip that because I don't think there is. Anyway, he suggested the conclusion of the suggestion is to play a little bit more sort of like modern POC appealing music because we tend to play he said we play a lot of white people music basically. We do.
Just letting you know, Alex, that I have absolutely no say in the music that goes on here.
Yeah.
It's all their decisions.
It's mostly Luke.
Mostly Luke.
So today it's
actually, who I'm assuming is listening in from the Netherlands.
Yeah, possibly, yeah. So the first track today is from a band called Afrodiz. They are an Afrobeat band from Montreal.
Afrodiz like Afro Disco or
just Afrodiz. They're based out of Montreal. I don't know if anybody's queer, but I mean, sometimes you just got to support Canadian musicians.
While this
cool.
song is playing, we're going to look up a bio about them.
I did look up a little bio about them. I just didn't memorize it. They're in my notes over there at the other end of the room. I do know one of the members of the band has the same last name as me. And in Quebec, if you are a Plant, you are related. That's just how it is. He's probably like a second cousin.
So you're like already 1/5 of this band.
Yeah, basically. Me, personally, yeah. So we're going to start off with this Canadian Afrobeat band. And I listened to like 3 tracks and I just doubled right back to this one because it's like, I actually really like this song. I just want to play it because it's a good song. So anyway, this is Yadza by Afrodiz.
Then what's the sum? If numbers fall and they call on our only song.
knock on the better.
What'd you think of that?
I liked it. The music video was perfect. If your friend was complaining about not having enough white music, that was perfect.
Okay. All right. So I did manage to interview one gentleman who will introduce himself on the clip. He is an epidemiologist. And if you're wondering, what is an epidemiologist? That's actually in the interview.
You should just let the interview explain.
But I want to talk about this first, because he originally was going to come on, but it turns out, again, as I mentioned, when you have people who are professionals and experts, they're busy being professionals and experts. And so I went around to his place, and we had this wonderful 20-minute interview. It was fantastic. There was Ferengi jokes. There was absolutely, because he uses census data, and he said, "I study humans," and then I was just like, "Humans!" right in the middle of the interview. And anyway, it was a thing. But then it turns out that
I have been, by the way, binging as much Star Trek as possible. I've never been into Star Trek, but now I am.
Yeah. So it turns out that the recording software that I was using likes Linux-based platforms, but doesn't love Linux-based platforms. So only 5 minutes of the interview actually got recorded.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Oh, Sebastian.
I know. That's okay. It was the first 5 minutes where, like, the meat of the conversation.
But where
was,
does it? It just cuts off?
No, I edited it so that it cuts at a nice spot. But anyway. Shush. 20 minutes was too long. We were going to have to dump the rest online anyway. All right. So here is my discussion with. Actually, wait. I have to turn this up, don't I? Yes, I do. All right. Here we go.
What are you doing?
So I'm here with Marc-André Belair.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a bit about yourself.
Sure. The same question applies. What do you want to, like? Honestly.
Why are you a person that I am interested in speaking to?
I am a epidemiologist. I work in a research institute, and I guess I have a bit of experience with sciencey things.
So if somebody out there doesn't know, not only what is an epidemiologist, but what is an epidemiologist in your case? Because I'm sure they all do something slightly different.
Sure. So, I mean, an epidemiologist is really a health sciences researcher who's concerned about looking at questions on health, more at a population level. Okay. So we're less interested in the minutia of like which proteins are interacting with whatever, and more about transmission of disease between people, risk factors for disease.
So you're not interested in whether or not Margaret has a cold. You're interested in how many Margarets will have a cold.
And how they might have gotten the cold and so on. Yep.
Okay. So how is census data useful for you?
So census data is really useful for us because especially when we're doing large population-based surveys, it's important to know, A, whether the samples of individuals that were... the samples of the population that we're using are representative, and if not, they allow us to correct for that. So it's important to know, who are we surveying, why are we surveying them, and how does that compare to the general population? And that's important because, depending on the type of survey, you may only be interviewing 1,000 people or, mm-hmm. or 500 people, or if you're really lucky, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands, or if you're doing administrative data research like I do, sampling from almost the entire population of a province. You want to be able to make sure that what you're talking about and what your results aren't biased towards specific populations. Okay. So one of the things we often talk about is underrepresentation. So our studies may underrepresent certain populations like Aboriginals or people who are in federal institutions or there's a whole bunch of different types of things like
that. This is actually something I come across sometimes doing public planning and services and things like that, where some people would say, there's a whole lot of white people here, and then you just look up, you're like, well, 80% of the local population is white, and we have 70% white, so...
Right, exactly.
This is not that bad in the grand scheme. Now, this is a totally different approach, obviously, mm-hmm. than from what you're doing, but it's kind of similar in the sense of you might look at a sample and be like, we only have 40... Métis women over 60. That's weird. And then you look and you say, oh, that's actually a lot of people for our sample size.
Right, exactly. Okay. And so, yeah.
Relative to how many Inuit... Did I say Métis or Inuit? Whatever.
You said Métis, but...
Okay, yeah. How many Métis women over 60 there are in Canada in general. And, and then you find out you actually have way more than you thought.
Exactly. Yeah. And that may skew... And that's important to know because it may skew your results one way or another. So, for example, I'm just trying to think... Homeless population, really hard to capture in our research.
Yes.
So if, for example, we're looking at HIV or hepatitis C transmission, and we do a sample of the general population, we're not going to capture homeless population, or not necessarily homeless, but, who have housing security issues.
Address people.
Exactly. Yeah. I forget what the actual term for that is.
Yeah, there's a technical political term for that.
But anyway, so we won't be capturing as many of those people in our sample, but which is a shame because they tend to be at much higher risk compared to an average individual who may have, good housing situation, good food, etc. So it'll so that'll skew the results towards making it look less worse than it might actually be.
Okay.
All right. So that was the first 4 minutes of that interview, and I really like talking with him. Actually, he interviewed very well. Mm-hmm. We sort of went on from there, and there was the rest of the discussion. I'll blend that in with the next thing. So actually, also last night, I interviewed another expert. For professional reasons, he didn't want to be recorded or identified. So because he actually works in marketing and advertising, and so right, he the kind of data that he uses, he wanted to be sensitive to the organizations that he contracts for. Mm-hmm. So a lot of interviews there, and asking him about how does he use census data when doing marketing. He works a lot with festivals, and so something he needs to know is what is the size of the municipality. You can also attract a lot of funding using census data. So something this is the example that he came up with, and I loved it so much I wrote it down. If there's a lot of farmers in your area, you're gonna find it much easier to attract funding for a country fair, for example, or some kind of a farmers market kind of event, or some sort of horticultural festival or something that the census data can actually be very helpful for promoting different kinds of events and being able to attract funding to different festivals and or programs, for example, if you're doing some kind of public service thing. He also talked a lot about performance measurements, and this is something that I'm aware they exist, but it's just sort of off my radar as a concept. When you, for example, if you have a festival that brings in, let's say 25,000 people, you estimate 25,000 attendees there were. If you're in a city of 120,000 people, that's massive. That is really good return. Mm-hmm. That means you're more likely to attract funding. It means that you're a viable festival. It means it goes down the list. Like I know actually there is one festival in Southern Ontario that I'm pretty sure attracts more people than the population of the city that it's in. And that's the Winona Peach Festival. Seriously, peach milkshakes, made with fresh peaches.
Yeah, that sounds great.
It's absolutely fantastic. You do end up in Winona. And if you're from the Hamilton area, Winona is a common punchline to jokes. And, you know, apologies to anybody from that area, but I'm sure you also are sympathetic with that. But no, the Winona Peach Festival is huge, and Winona is not huge. So, I mean, they probably have no troubles attracting funding because they can say these are the estimated numbers versus this is the local population. So now both of them together, I asked them, how would you actually ask the question on the census? And this is the big issue that I really do think is at sort of the core of why this is an important issue. We did have a third guest who had to cancel today because she was profoundly ill. Why are you shaking your head at me?
I always try to get guests, and I hear some of the most ridiculous excuses. And obviously, you know, professionals have their excuses that are legitimate.
Yeah.
But sometimes people provide no excuse at all.
Well, this guest was super keen on coming in.
Super keen.
She's in geography working with human data. Does a lot with census work. Currently specializing, if I remember correctly, HIV transmission in Aboriginal women. And was very keen on talking about the thing that I'm about to talk about right now, which is balancing privacy, dignity, and respect with good data collection. And how do you do that? And this is something that I asked. I was going to interview this nice young lady today, but unfortunately. But she was really keen, so we're going to get her in another episode to talk about, I don't know, something else. But anyway, so one of the issues that came up is how do you actually implement it on the form? So when I was speaking to the marketing guy, he said self-identification. You just have an empty spot and you say, how do you identify? And then you just type it in.
That would be super easy.
That would be super easy mm-hmm. for the person writing the census.
Yes.
For data analysis, it would be incredibly difficult.
Mm-hmm.
When I mention this to, he goes by the nickname Mab.
Do you think that they won't collect that data because it might spoil the result to them it won't be relevant? I don't know. Go on, though. I am listening. I'm just... Okay. I'm learning and engaging with
you.
You're
learning and engaging. So yes. When I was speaking with the epidemiologist, with Mab, about this, so Marc-André Bellard is Mab. He usually goes by the name Mab.
You already gave him...
No.
Oh, he goes by this.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I've known him for about 4 years now. I only learned that his
just
name
Just by
was,
his three initials.
Yeah, I only learned like a serial that his name killer. Was Mark.
Like a serial killer.
A year ago. No, not quite like a serial killer. More like a DJ, I guess.
More like a DJ.
So... He actually felt that the trick here to being sensitive and dignified while also collecting good data is offloading a lot of the information onto the system. And this is what I mean by this. So we know actually that Ottawa, the city of Ottawa, has the highest number of same-sex families in Canada, both in terms of proportion of the population and in terms of...
Ottawa.
Ottawa, yes. More than Toronto, more than Vancouver. And... This information is not on the census, so how did they get that information? And it was just really good extrapolation. Also, bear in mind that the CRA, the tax people, share a lot of data with the Stats Canada people.
Oh, they do?
They share a lot of data. You can opt out of it. That's an option. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of sharing. And so if you indicate on your taxes, if you check the box that says male, and you check the box that says married, and you check the box that says dependent... If they cross-list that with the person that you're married to, and they also check the box that says male and married and with a dependent, then they know that you are a gay couple with a kid. So they don't need to ask you, are you a gay couple with a kid? They can just figure it out. So one of the approaches that Mab was really fond of was the idea of asking two or three very simple questions and then just letting the computer figure it out.
So that you don't have to ask their gender or their sexuality.
Yeah.
It can figure out based upon if you share a dependent. For example,
That would be if you're
if you identify as male and married.
Yeah.
Doesn't say who you're married to, but if you have a dependent and someone else with the same answer.
Yeah.
It's the exact same answers, the computer should be able to figure it out.
When you
there's two different people who've answered the same questions.
Who cross-linked
clearly
to each other,
they are. Yeah.
Yeah.
So finding a correlation just by logic.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
if two married men share a daughter or a son.
Right.
It'd be very easy to figure out.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things if you're talking about gay, bi, and lesbian, that is, it's a little bit more difficult to extrapolate that kind of information. You would just have to ask, do you identify as something on the spectrum? And you'd probably just have a single check, and it doesn't really matter if you're specifically bi or omni or garden variety gay or whatever. It's you know, you're on the spectrum of some variety. Trans issues is a different issue because you have intergenerational differences when it comes to trans identities, for example. So I actually know several trans women who are older, like 40 and above, who don't identify as trans women. They identify as women because they're in their world, in their mind, in their view, they didn't go through all that effort and suffering and cost to become a trans woman. They did to become a woman. Whereas younger generation tends to they embrace the trans identity, and it's not a matter of rejecting it or accepting it. There's different reasons to do that. So, I mean, you do politicize your body when you identify as trans instead of being a man or a woman. But that's also very progressive, and also it kind of indicates that you're a woman, but you're like a woman plus, you know, that you have other intersectional issues going on that people might care about. It might be relevant. So, but anyway, so one of the things is that just saying you're trans is vague, though, because
very vague.
You have non-transitioning trans-identified people, so people who identify as multigendered but have no intention of biologically altering their bodies. And so it gets kind of interesting sometimes. So he, as an epidemiologist, he wants to know, what is your biological birth sex? Because even if you do transition, there are still links. So trans women have the same rates of heart disease as biological men. And a lot of it just comes down to the genes. But as he reminded me, it's more than just male and female, because you have XX for female, XY for male. And then you have this other category of just X, XXY. And I think there's such a thing as XXX. As
there are 5 chromosome people. There are 4 chromosome people. There are 3 chromosome
people. It can happen.
Yeah.
And sometimes they never know. They can live their entire lives and have no health problems.
I don't know why, and I shouldn't have done this. I was joking about someone I know. It's like, I think they have an extra chromosome or something, but not one of those good kind of chromosomes.
Okay.
It was really mean. It was just a joke. I think it was my friend Serge.
So, I mean, you do have male, female, and other. And then you have – and this actually has a lot of impact on – healthcare, and it could also be, you know, if they cross link, if they cross reference your birth biological sex versus how much you spend on healthcare, that could have a lot of impact on social planning. It could have a lot of impact on community centers. It could have a lot of impact on healthcare providers, that sort of thing. Then, second category would actually be, what is the gender that you present? And so you present male, you present female, you present other. And so the other, I mean, putting all of it together is, it could be problematic. And this is actually something that he mentioned, that you could actually list out. There's a sex research lab at University of Ottawa. And I know several of the people there. And I've asked them once about, like, do they put bi, pan, and omni in separate categories? And they say it completely depends on the research. Sometimes they just lump it all together. Sometimes they count it distinctly, because it depends on what you're doing, whether it's useful to separate them or to lump them together. So there's a lot of issues with that. So speaking with Mab, he said that when it comes to the gender and biological sex, he said, you know, fracture it as much as you want. Like, have you know, 10 boxes or whatever. But the problem is that you can't run stats on 20 people. So if the sample size is too small, then you start merging with things that are vaguely similar. So I know people who identify as both man and woman, neither man and women, or either man or woman, depending on the day, depending on whatever.
Of course.
And because gender is really complicated when you spend a lot of time in the community, especially when you...
Especially if you are someone who picks their gender based upon a variety of factors, yeah. Mood, the day, what the temperature is like or something. There's a variety of issues
that cannot... Well, it's more abstract than that.
I know, it's much more abstract, but like it cannot just be explained in a handful of words.
Not to somebody who doesn't identify that way.
Exactly.
So I've... Not only that, but interviewing people for the show all the time, I've met a lot of people with a lot of different gender identities. So lumping them all together as just category C may not be fair, but having this sort of like non-binary, just putting like man, woman, non-binary, and then having the computer figure out that if your birth sex is female and your gender presentation is man, then the computer would just go, this is a trans person. Now, again, why do we care about this? It just comes back to the exact same thing that we started the episode on. So if you cross-reference all the people who are trans spectrum of some variety relative to their income, for example, now all of a sudden you have issues of accessibility to work. How much do they spend on healthcare? Now you have issues on whether or not we need to increase funding for this category. Why would you want, like, why would you care if somebody is birth man, and I actually know that's less interesting. If somebody is birth female, identifies as woman, why does that matter? If you take all of those individuals and then cross-reference their income, now you have information on the glass ceiling, right? So if you present as woman, there's the usual cultural societal things about access to work, access to certain kinds of jobs.
Healthcare.
People who identify as gendered male access healthcare less. And there's also issues like there's certain careers that people who are gendered male tend to be cut out on. So nursing is changing quite drastically. There's more male nurses all the time. But if you're looking at early childhood care providers, so like kindergarten teachers, there are very few male kindergarten teachers in Canada relative to the whole. And so now you can start comparing these things about like how does gender presentation compare to work and access and all this sort of thing, and then the biological sex is mostly biomedical. So how can we actually make plans and decisions and funding and all that kind of thing for that? But then it's when I spoke with the marketing guy, he was like, no, just have them self-identify. Because the moment you start putting people into boxes, there's going to be confusion. There's going to be people who are like, well, you know, there's three categories here. There's three options, but I'm between this one and this one. Do I check them both? Do I check them either? Do I have to choose? And doing that, forcing people to choose, especially when this is new, the idea of non-binary gendered in Western culture is very new. It's only been a part of the social discourse for maybe 10 years. And in more academic activist circles, maybe since the 70s. So this is new, and we're still figuring these things out. We're still figuring out how to do this in a dignified way. You're looking at your at the time, and that's actually a good cue to go to the next song. So the next song is from a band called Alcazar, that actually charted internationally and had multiple hits. And being public radio, we're not actually supposed to do that, except they never charted in Canada.
So you get to play it.
So I get to play it. It's one of those things where, like, the whole world got access to this.
And works in your favor, yeah.
Yeah, it works in my favor. It came out in 2002, so this is actually a new disco track, if you're familiar with the term new disco, so NU disco. But it was one of the early new discos. And new disco is basically you take sort of early 2000s dance music and then you blend it with disco. Current new disco that's coming out is more, it feels more like downtempo or more like deep house. It feels more like deep house. But anyway, this is This is Alcazar. They're a Swedish group. And so this is a... So a Canadian... A Canadian Afrobeat group, a gay
disco. Yeah, this is going to be very white, I can already tell.
And then,
oh, I think I've seen this video before, actually.
It's a good video. Yeah. And the guy's wearing shiny pants, and he looks really hot because he's wearing sports equipment. But anyway, so, Crying at the Discotheque by Alcazar.
There's a lot of finger pointing in that.
There's a lot of finger pointing.
There was arguing. There was shiny pants. There was, I don't know how to say it. They were wearing like
animal heads.
No. They were wearing animal heads
and Star Trek uniforms.
Star Trek crossed with hockey gear and a lot of chrome. And it was a lot.
You have the same problem that Luke does, where video is not on radio.
Video is not on radio, so I have to describe it to you because that's just what I saw. We had a good laugh about it.
I like it. I dig it. Actually, I remember people used to dress up in crazy costumes like that to go dancing.
Mm-hmm.
I miss that. I miss those days of like, I used to have,
hey guys, let's dress up and go to the Billy Idol concert.
Well, maybe not that much, but like, between me and my friends, we actually had a glitter collection. Seriously. This is what it was like going clubbing in 2001. And people would be like, I love your glitter. Do you want to swap for the night? Like, I'll use yours, you use mine. This was actually a thing that happened. Anyway, what do we talk? Oh, right. We're talking about the census. Okay. My brain just completely and totally emptied out. Let's see. Looking at my notes here. Right. Okay. The other thing with regards to all this is the census itself is interesting. You can get some really good data out of that. What makes the census very useful for a lot of things is not this census, but the next one and the next one after that and following trends.
Mm.
So it's one thing to say, okay, now we know that F to M trans men have on average slightly better incomes than M to F or something. And you can actually track that over time because the census is done every 4 years or so. Or is it five? I think it's 4 years. No, elections is 4 years. Census is five.
Census, I believe, is every four.
Okay.
Because the last one was like 2000...
Last one doesn't count.
Okay, okay.
Because we skipped a couple.
Relax. No, yeah. I'm just joking. we did skip a few. That is true. But it's normally supposed to be every 4 to 5 years.
Okay.
Because mm-hmm. Apparently that's as far back as Sebastian's memory goes.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. Right, so being able to track these changes over time is also good for agencies and healthcare providers and whatnot because it allows them to determine how successful their programs are and whether or not the investment into these various social programs are actually worth it. So, I mean, you can look at Spain and Portugal, no, just Spain, is using census data to track the drug decriminalization laws to see what is the actual long-term impact of this. So it doesn't actually have on the census, are you an addict? That's not going to be on there. But they can track income levels. And if you're willing to disclose your health status, they can actually cross-reference that in other ways. So, I mean, cross-referencing is what it's all about. I mean, I've actually put together surveys of my own where there's like five or six very normal questions, you know, what is your age, what is your income, where are you from, blah blah blah, and then you have one really weird question that on its own doesn't look like something that's relevant, but when you start like, well, this plus this equals this kind of data and that plus that equals that kind of data, so like how the CRA figured out how many same-sex families there are in Canada. Now as it happens, the Census Bureau of the United States has been working with a few groups, and I know I have mentioned this on air multiple times, but there's this wonderful study that came out a couple years ago, and it was very elegantly titled, How Many Gay, Bisexual, and Lesbian People Are There in Canada, in America? It was very simply just, how many are there? That was the name of it. And they worked with the Census Bureau. It isn't on the American Census yet, but from the way that this sort of pilot study was done, figuring out what kinds of questions attract negative impact of people in the community complaining that, you know, this was a violation of privacy or this was not dignified or this did not ask me a question in a way that I liked it. You know, you could have phrased it this other way instead. Now they're learning and they can actually put that on the census. The problem is that when it's on the census, it's obligatory.
Mm-hmm.
If you get the census card, you have to respond.
Mm-hmm.
There's a non-response fine, I think. It's not...
It's not significant.
You don't go to jail or anything.
You don't go to jail or anything, though.
But it there, yeah.
But it does come with a very stern warning on the front when you get the letter.
Yeah.
Do the census. It's the law.
It's the law.
It's the law.
Yeah. So there is a significant chance that this kind of data will show up on the next Canadian census because people are starting to get very curious about this, especially mental health care providers and healthcare providers. They're slightly worried about their reach within the community. So they're not getting a lot of people in, but they also don't know how many people there are to have to come in. So this kind of goes back to what Mab said about, you know, the standards of the community. And, you know, maybe we have, you know, we only, like, this is the example that I gave in the interview, but, you know, we've only got 40 Métis women. That's not enough. And then you actually look at the census data, you're like, actually, that's six times more than you would expect, given whatever, given the size of the city or what have you. And so being able to tell these things, you know, this is very useful in terms of sort of navigating the country into a better space, being able to determine what needs doing, what kind of help, where should we put our money, that kind of thing. It's not just a matter of counting, you know, how many gay people there are. Now, there is one little sort of afterthought to all this, and that is one of the major sources of apprehension. And this actually, there's a lot of people in Ottawa speaking about this because Ottawa has this specific history, and that is the Lavender Scare. And I don't know if you're familiar with that term. So are you familiar with the term the Red Scare? Yes. So during the Cold War, everybody was basically afraid that everyone was a communist. You were an artist, therefore, and you didn't have a
nuclear... You were liberal,
subversive, and therefore you were a communist. There was also, you know, you were homosexual, therefore you were subversive, and therefore you were a communist. You have mental health challenges, therefore you don't fit in, therefore you're subversive, therefore you're a communist.
Atheist.
It went on. It was just basically...
It went on and on. Yeah.
If you did not get pooped out of a cookie cutter, then you were a communist, and therefore you were worthy of investigation and whatnot. But because of this association... hundreds of thousands of public service workers were spied on by the government, and anyone that they figured out was gay was fired without, like, it just cut off, like your pension cut off, a whole bunch of problems. This is the origin of Public Service Pride, which is actually one of the largest groups in Ottawa, and they are really monitoring to make sure that this kind of thing does not happen again. So there is reason to worry about this kind of thing, because if we do have census data that shows, you know, this is, these are all the people who identify in Canada, we're just one bad government away from this becoming sensitive information that could cause harm. But as it happens, because of a whole bunch of leaks that happened in the 70s and 80s, where the Census Bureau was not super great in terms of security, they've really turned around on that, and actually Canada, our Census Bureau, has some of the best security out of all the Census Bureaus in the world. And something that this came up when I spoke to the marketing guy, who incidentally used to work at Stats Canada and has many colleagues at Stats Canada. When I spoke with Mab, this came up as well. And then I spoke to, who else was this? Medicine, I think. No, I don't remember who it was. But anyway, multiple people saying, from the way that Stats Canada, the administration, works, they would be willing to put money on the upper administration just purging all data rather than handing it over to a bad government who's willing to arrest people just for being gay. Now, that's all speculation. This has nothing to do with the people in charge. This is just, these are people who have worked with the security measures at the Census Bureau and being able to, because even though most of the results are publicly available, there are some results that you actually need a special request to get at it. And they said, going through all those hoops, you know, this guy's an epidemiologist. He is studying public health. You would think that he could just call them up and be like, hey, can I get the data? But no.
That's Access to Information Act. And
absolutely. You could be on a first name basis with every single person in the office, and you still have to fill out every sheet. And so the idea of having a distrust with authority, especially if you identify as LGBT, it's a very real worry. And as I said, we're just one bad government away from backsliding. And we like to think that, you know, as Canadians, we're above that kind of thing. But are we? Are we really?
Can we probably conclude that this census was kind of like a dry run? Like, we gotta bring this back.
Yeah.
So we're gonna do what we were trying. We'll try to do what we were doing before.
Yeah.
That's not gonna work.
Yeah.
They're gonna need a new system.
Well,
they might even need to do another one in a short period of time.
In the 8-year gap that we didn't have a census, all of a sudden, agencies across Canada started caring about LGBTQ issues. And so when the census came back, they're like, "Where's the data?" And they're like, "We're not used to people caring." And so. right. All right. So, I don't know. I guess we'll call that an episode. We have one more song to go through.
What is the song?
This song is Don't Let Go by Yo Majesty. She's a lesbian rapper from, I think it was LA. Really good one. Actually, she's listed as hip hop, but here's a fun thing. Hip hop is actually a culture. It's not a musical style.
Yes, it is.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So hip hop is the triumvirate of tagging, breaking, and rapping. And this is, I get corrected on this every so often, that, you know, you can't say music is hip hop. You could say music has hip hop influence, because that means the culture of hip hop influenced the thing. But no, the music is rap. And anyway, a really good rapper. Also, I love this right here. Look at the screen. What's this? It's punctuation in the middle. Okay, I love that. Godspeed you, exclamation point, like Emperor. I love that. Panic, exclamation point, at the disco. I love it when there's punctuation in the middle. But yeah, Yo Majesty, Don't Let Go. This is from 2009. And thank you very much for listening.
Oh, also, you guys need to get Canadian content on your show. A lot of it is international. So if anybody out there in this audience has any Canadian content music, which would be great to play on this program, please let Luke and Sebastian know.
We're supposed to do 15%. We played three songs.
It's 35% Canadian, actually.
Oh, well, yeah. The first song was Canadian, so that we've actually 33, so we're pretty close.
Perfect. All right. So we are pretty close.
So this has been the Velvet Studio, and thank you very much for listening.